This is Common Sense Radio. Straightforward and no excuses.
All right. Come on now.
This is the Steve Gruber Show.
Call me crazy.
Ooh, yeah.
What I said was perfectly right and spot on accurate.
Boy's got a mouth like a cannon, always shooting it all.
Stop. Yeah, stop. I mean, you're way off script.
Got it in me. Gonna quit until it all comes out.
Hey, boy.
Yeah, you know, it's not cynical, it's common sense.
Pay attention to me when I'm talking to you.
I'm gonna rock the nation. Rock the nation.
Genuine, accountable, and raw. Here is Steve Gruber.
All right, it's 6 minutes after the hour on this Thursday. By the way, if you realize partway through the day that the office is fairly empty, you might want to look around at some of the neighborhood bars, sports bars in particular, because, of course, March Madness begins in earnest today, and even people that aren't basketball fans as a general rule find it to be a very exciting day. Tomorrow, they might not show up either. Hell, they might not show up for a couple of days. March Madness straight into St. Patrick's Day. It could be ugly for that guy down the hall from you there. Yeah, you might want to stick your head and say, hey, you going to be all right? I mean, first today is March Madness, then St. Patrick's Day tomorrow. You gonna be all right? All right. Just you gotta check on people from time to time. Make sure they're gonna be okay. Donald Trump in Michigan yesterday, pulling back on Barack Obama's car fuel standards, those CAFE standards as they're called, the mileage standards, saying, you know, we've got to be mindful of American jobs here in Michigan. At the American Center for Mobility in IPSI, he vowed to make the U.S. the car capital of the world again. He spent time talking about fuel standards, American jobs, manufacturing, buying USA, all of these things. Speaking to those auto workers, and I want to go with clip 8 here, Alex, because I think this touches on a lot of it. Talking about tariffs and protectionism and some of the things that he's talking about to get rid of some of the unfair trading, as he calls it, and renegotiating different deals. Here's the president in Michigan.
In supporting tariffs, Jackson said, I look at the tariff with an eye to the proper distribution of labor and to revenue, and with a view to discharge our national debt. We owe $20 trillion. $20 trillion with our policies. America cannot be a wealthy country if special interests game the system to profit from the exodus of our companies and from the exodus of our jobs. Our great presidents from Washington to Jefferson to Jackson to Lincoln all understood that a great nation must protect its manufacturing, must protect itself from the outside.
So that's more of the same theme that you've heard. He's not against free trade, but he supports fair trade has been a mantra of this president since he began campaigning back in mid-2015 and prior to his election. And since that time, he has made that clear that that is his approach to trade, renegotiating NAFTA, getting rid of the TPP, which he already did, and a lot of things going forward. During his trip to Michigan, he also sat down with Tucker Carlson from Fox News. He had a chance to visit with Tucker Carlson, and he did not back away from this discussion of wiretaps at all. And in fact, this conversation is going on for about 2.5 weeks now since he tweeted on a Saturday that Obama had wiretapped Trump Tower. He continues to say, listen, we're going to look into it now. And now the House Intel panel is launching a probe of not only what's going on there, but the leaks coming out, things that snagged up people like General Flynn when he got caught in a conversation. Incidental catch, by the way, by the intelligence agencies. But let's listen to this portion of the Tucker Carlson interview with the president about wiretaps, and listen to how the president sticks with it. Clip 11.
I've been reading about things. I read in, I think it was January 20th, a New York Times article where they were talking about wiretapping. There was an article, I think they used that exact term. I read other things. I watched your friend Brett Baer the day previous where he was talking about certain very complex sets of things happening and wiretapping. I said, wait a minute, there's a lot of wiretapping being talked about. I've been seeing a lot of things. Now, for the most part, I'm not going to discuss it because we have it before the committee and we will be submitting things before the committee very soon. That hasn't been submitted as of yet. But it's potentially a very serious situation.
So 51,000 people retweeted that. So a lot of people thought that was plausible. They believe you. You're the president. Yeah. You're in charge of the agencies. Every intelligence agency reports to you. Why not immediately go to them and gather evidence to support that?
Because I don't want to do anything that's going to violate any strength of an agency. You know, we have enough problems. And by the way, with the CIA, I just want people to know, the CIA was hacked and a lot of things taken. That was during the Obama years. That was not during us. That was during the Obama situation. Mike Pompeo is there now doing a fantastic job. But we will be submitting certain things, and I will be perhaps speaking about this next week, but it's right now before the committee, and I think I want to leave it there. I have a lot of confidence.
Why
in the
not
committee.
Wait to tweet about it until you can prove it? Don't you devalue your words when you can't provide evidence?
Because the New York Times wrote about it. You know, not that I respect the New York Times. I call it the failing New York Times. But they did write on January 20th using the word wiretap. Other people have come out with
president. You have the ability to gather all the evidence you want.
I do, but I think that, frankly, we have a lot right now. And I think if you watch, the Bret Baier and what he was saying and what he was talking about and how he mentioned the word wiretap, you would feel very confident that you could mention the name. He mentioned it, and other people have mentioned it. But if you take a look at some of the things written about wiretapping and eavesdropping, and don't forget, when I say wiretap, those words were in quotes. That really covers, because wiretapping is pretty old-fashioned stuff, but that really covers surveillance and many other things. And nobody ever talks about the fact that it was in quotes, but that's a very important thing. But wiretap covers a lot of different things. I think you're going to find some very interesting items coming to the forefront over the next 2 weeks.
And there you have it. We'll see if he sticks to it now. Now, the House Intel Committee has taken its first public steps in its investigation into the community, the intelligence community leaks. Devin Nunes is the committee chair. He is moving forward with his Democratic counterpart, Adam Schiff. They are pressing the CIA, the FBI, and the National Security Agency, among others, who may have been spied on through a loophole in U.S. surveillance. They want to figure out who has been spied on, and then were subsequently unmasked and exposed to the media. Now, you'll hear a lot about that, but for the next couple of days, you'll hear probably a lot about this, and that is Donald Trump's budget now being revealed, $1.15 trillion budget, a proposal that seeks to increase military spending and other security spending while cutting money that's being sent to several places, including agencies like the EPA and the State Department. Trump says they're going to do more with less, have no options. It's time to prioritize, he says, and security is at the top of the list. The well-being of Americans is at the top of the list. And ask the rest of the world to step up and pay its fair share for, by the way, foreign spending, additional, you know, foreign programs. $54 billion, a 10% boost for the military, is the largest since President Ronald Reagan's Pentagon built up during the 1980s. So very Reagan-esque what he's asking for out of the military. But you'll hear a lot about that budget going forward, I am sure, because I'm sure there'll be a lot of people screaming and crying and hollering that they're getting the short end of it. And maybe they are and maybe they're not, but we have to tighten the buckle and tighten the belt somewhere. And there you have it. 14 after on the Steve Gruber Show.
Keeping you in touch with Michigan and the world.
All right, as I mentioned earlier, the Fed raising rates again for the second time since Donald Trump became president, and expect this trend to continue, apparently. Their target of 2% inflation is what we're told, but I'm not sure what to make of that. What I do know is that if you have an adjustable rate mortgage, or you are looking to buy a car or a house, the rates are going up and not down. Clark Hargis, our good friend of the program here, financial strategist. Clark, welcome back to the program.
Thank you so much for having me. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good, doing good. So, I mean, the average person, you know, they see, well, the Fed raised rates, and they're like, what does that mean? So help us. What does that mean to me, the average consumer?
I think one raise in and of itself doesn't mean a whole lot. We're on a trend upward, though, and we've been on a trend upward for over a year now, although we've only had a couple of raises. But it's going to continue to raise. So as a consumer, I would be thinking, I'm sitting here in my home and I'm thinking, okay, I've got an arm on my mortgage, and the rate can't change for about six more years. But if rates are going to go up, and then in 6 years, rates are going to be, let's say, 30-year mortgage, 15-year mortgage, maybe 5.5%, then I'm going to start thinking about where I should lock in and go ahead and make it a fix. And so those kinds of things should be going off in your mind. Also, when you talk about, you know, credit cards, if you can get better rates on cards, because those are going to be going up. But it's going to be more of a gradual thing. It's not going to happen overnight. But you can rest assured that mortgages, car loans, all those kinds of things, the rates are going to start inching up.
Well, as I look at this, though, you know, they say that there's been two rate increases so far, both a quarter of a point or 25 basis points, however you want to look at it, but a quarter of a point. And they say, they being the experts like yourself, expecting that the Fed, Janet Yellen, is going to continue this approach, and several more raises could be, several more increases could be on the way. At what point should I be getting serious about making sure that my mortgage is locked in? Or if I want to buy the car, maybe not wait another 6 months, or whatever the case may be, at what point does it force me to make a decision?
Well, it forces you to make a decision once the rate is the main factor in whether you do something or not. So if someone's going to move because they like a house better, they're going to move for that main reason, and they're going to get the rate, the best rate they can.
Right.
But if you're saying to yourself, you know, I've got to go ahead and move because rates are going to go up and they're high now, and I just want to lock in, then you're saying to yourself that the rate is the most important decision most important factor in making that decision. Same with purchasing a car. So at some point, maybe a year, year and a half down the road, that may be the main factor in a lot of people's decision is the rate. Go ahead and get this done so I can get the rate locked in. But at this point, you know, you're still going to only buy a car if you need a new car, if you want a new car and you can afford it, a new house, if you want a new house. At some point, that'll change. But I think that's probably a year or two down the road, some more rate increases.
Still a little bit a ways out. Clark Hodges with us here, financial strategist. All right, so give me your general impressions of the economy then. We see the Dow still screaming hot, at least for now. Of course, the government, the expectations, the Trump administration is going to have to lower taxes and do some of the things that they have promised in order for the Dow to remain that hot, I believe. But consumer confidence at a 15-year high. I see CEOs, the highest confidence rate of company leaders since 2009. I see a lot of very positive things out there in the tea leaves, but I'm going to guess you can read them better than I can. What do you make of it when you see several different indicators on the economy?
Well, the main thing I see and look at is the market, obviously, being that's what we do, and the market does look forward. So the market's telling you they see good things on the horizon. They're very encouraged. And the way I interpret that is capitalism is back in vogue. Private sector, making money, putting people to work, growing your wealth, your net worth, that's good again. That's acceptable again. Obama's take on the private sector is long gone. And so you're starting to know that boards of directors are sitting down after this election, after a couple months, where they're saying, okay, we're going to get a tax break, not only corporately, but personally. We're going to have less regulation going forward. What are we going to do with it? What are we going to do with our business? How are we going to plan for the future? And businesses are planning not for next month and next year. They're planning for 3 and 4 years down the road and the growth that they're going to see. So there's optimism just in the capitalistic system that we have, and that businesses are going to be less regulated, and they're going to pay less in taxes. And so that growth is exciting to people, and it's seeping into the economy, and I think that's a wonderful thing. We have companies come through our offices 15 or so a week, and without a doubt, the main factor on CEOs and CFOs' mind as it relates to the economy is not taxes, it's regulation. Less regulation is the biggest factor in growth.
And now we know you've seen the Trump administration so far knock down one bit of regulation after another, after another. I believe I'm going to see that continue. In fact, in Michigan yesterday, he's going to roll back the requirements for the fuel standards, which I know doesn't affect you in the least, but it does affect a lot of people in manufacturing and people that drive cars. But gas is still cheap. I looked up yesterday at $2.15. I'm thinking, man, that's pretty good.
Yeah. And one thing I'll mention as well is Obamacare. So in the last jobs report, somebody told me that the biggest growth in companies adding employees was companies with already 50 employees and up. Well, that tells you right there that this is a big push for adding employees based on the fact that Obamacare is going away, because you were penalized under Obamacare if you had more than 50 employees.
Right, so or full-time equivalent, the FTE deal, the full-time equivalent employees, which was also a job killer. Clark, we got to leave it there for today. Not sure where the repeal and replace is going to end up, but it certainly is moving forward. And next time we chat, maybe it'll have a little more concrete result.
Anything is better than what we have.
There you go. Clark Hodges, always a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. Take care.
All right. Hold right there. We'll be right back on the Steve Gruber Show.
Covering Michigan and the world from his bunker below the bridge. Here is Steve Gruber.
You know, I've heard a lot about this since Donald Trump became president. Time will really bear it out if it proves to be true over time. But a lot of conversations about transparency. The FCC, Ajit Pai there, says he wants to make sure that anything is done involving, you know, radio, television, the internet, that if there are going to be rule changes, he'll publish it on the internet for 2 or 3 weeks for everybody to see and comment on before they go forward with these sorts of things. So this kind of open policy is becoming a bit of a hallmark of this administration. Of course, the leaks are keeping a lot of things open as well, but that's unintentional. Jason Hayes is an environmental policy director for the Mackinac Center for Public Policy, joining me on the program to talk about the Honest Act. Jason, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Steve. I appreciate it.
The Honest Act deals with the EPA, science, and transparency. Tell our listeners what this is and what it will mean.
Well, the idea of it is to basically get the science that's underlining new regulations out into the open. So in the past, there's been issues with the EPA kind of not really being willing to share the data that was driving regulation. So they would say, we're going to put this new environmental regulation out. It's based on science, but you can't see the science. So
how convenient is that?
Pardon me?
I said, how convenient is that? We're going to impose this new rule based on the best science available that we're not going to tell you a thing about. I mean, come on.
Right. I mean, it's a trust us kind of thing. I mean, we're coming up to tax season. If your accountant said to you, I'm going to raise your rates here, your taxes are going up 30%, just cut me a check to me personally, and I'll work it out. Just trust me, it's all going to be okay.
Yeah.
Would you go, sure.
Yeah, no.
Here's the check.
No, that doesn't work so well for me.
You would probably question. You would probably want a second opinion. The only thing is, with the EPA, we don't get a second opinion. You've got the EPA, so you can't go shopping around for another EPA Junior or EPA 2.0. You're stuck with what you get.
So how would it affect, for example, the waters of the USA, which I thought was a horrible, horrible regulation, because I have a small hobby farm, if you will, and it would have affected everything. There's a small pond on the place. It's not open to any other waterway. It's not open to any other, you know, rivers, lakes, whatever. And yet right. That small pond, in fact, some would say right down to the mud puddles on the driveway, the two-track leading to the pond would have been regulated. What will it mean for people in Michigan, this kind of openness and transparency?
Well, at the Mackinac Center, we always push for openness and transparency. I mean, sometimes it can be a little uncomfortable having all the details, but it's better to be fully informed and know what's actually happening, know why something is going on or being proposed as a new policy or a new regulation, then you can make an informed choice. I mean, if you want the policy, then good, stick with it. If you don't, then do something new.
Let me ask you this. You know, obviously Michigan with, you know, 20% of the world's fresh water at our fingertips, when you have regulations from the EPA, it can directly impact not just what goes on here and the quality of the water, because we all want clean water and clean air, despite what might be said.
Of course.
And rolling back some of the money spent on the EPA doesn't mean that I want dirty water and dirty air. It just means that I think we have other priorities. As long as we focus on cleaning up the Great Lakes and cleaning up rivers when there are issues and so forth, that is a priority for me. So changing EPA regulations, I think Michigan stands as much to lose as probably any other state in America. It is important for us to know what's going on.
Absolutely. And we also need to, I think, kind of move past the notion that anything that, you know, comes out the door at the EPA is absolutely essential, and that if it doesn't happen exactly the way the EPA said it should happen, then it's somehow anti-science or anti-environment. That's, I mean, simply not true. If you look at the past 40 to 50 years, I mean, air pollution is a good example. From 1970 through to 2015, the EPA's own documents show that with reasonable regulation, we've been able to reduce the six major criteria pollutants by, I believe the numbers, on average 71%. And that's at the same time as we have the economy moving up, more vehicle miles traveled. I mean, there's a lot of things happening, and overall, the quality of our environment is improving markedly. So, I mean, that's obvious to anybody who was alive in the 70s. I mean, we had rivers on fire, we had acid rain, we had those kind of things going on. Those are very few and far between today. So we've got a much better quality of environment. We have cleaner air, cleaner water, all of those sorts of things. So at some point you can say, all right, we've achieved a lot here. Do we still need to be putting, you know, those heavy screws on? Nothing wrong with proper environmental regulation. Like you said, nobody wants dirty water. Nobody wants dirty air. But just because it comes out the front door at the EPA does not mean it's gospel.
Well, let me ask you this. And we're out with Jason Hayes from the Mackinac Center for Public Policy. He's the environmental policy director. Jason, are some of these things that the EPA has basically manhandled and taken over, wouldn't they have been better handled at the state level to begin with, many of these things? I mean, the Ausable River, wouldn't we be better to take care of the Ausable or Saginaw Bay or whatever the case may be when it comes to the environment? If there's a cleanup site from a, you know, an old underground leaking fuel tank, wouldn't we at the state level be better prepared to deal with such things and take it away from the federal government altogether?
Yes, and that's, I mean, most of those environmental issues are, I mean, constitutionally at the state level, so they should be. There are some things like with Great Lakes, there's, you know, national, international issues that need to be dealt with by federal governments. So you recognize that. But yes, I mean, if there's, you know, a brownfield site somewhere where there used to be an industrial factory or something like that within Michigan that's impacting only Michigan, yes, that's properly within the purview of the DEQ or the DNR. That's the Department of Environmental Quality or Natural Resources.
Right.
That's a state-level thing.
And when I was doing some pond restoration, I think is what it was called, the official thing on the form that I filled out with the DEQ, that's who I dealt with. I dealt with a couple of folks at the DEQ. They were great to deal with. Contrary to what people might think about dealing with a government agency, it was smooth. It was easy. I had to follow certain guidelines to do, you know, updating and maintenance on a small pond, like I said, but I don't need the EPA to come in and give their two cents worth when I'm being, you know, looked after. I've got a permit from the state, and it seems to follow pretty commonsensical guidelines in my estimation. Anyhow, I'll give you 30 seconds for the last word, Jason.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the people who work at the state level, they're good people. They want the same thing as everyone else. I mean, they want clean air, clean water. Just when we say through the Mackinac Center, we want the facts, basically. We want access to the data that is being used to justify something. And this is, I mean, the Honest Act is an example of it. You know, at a federal level, we want the same thing at state levels. We want to be educated, or at least have the ability to educate ourselves on these issues.
I couldn't agree more. Jason Hayes from the Mackinac Center for Public Policy, thank you for the conversation. Thanks for stopping in.
Yeah, thanks, Steve.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. The hotline's open. Why not? 888-900-9966. We'll be right back.
Keeping you in touch with Michigan and the world.
Guess you better slow your Mustang down. All right. Steve, we're showing a Thursday. Just looking around, making sure I'm not missing anything. Checking on it. Mike is on the line on the hotline, the Common Sense Hotline from Schwartz Creek today. Mike, welcome to the program.
Thank you. The one question I have, and I haven't heard anybody even talk about it, is what happened, talking about who's going to pay for what on the new health care program. What happened to the $700 billion they took out of Medicare? I mean, I'm 73, and I wasn't happy about that. I'm still not happy because I don't know where the hell the money went.
Yeah. You know what? I'll bet they don't either. Because that happened in a previous administration, and I don't mean to be glib or flippant about it, but the fact of the matter is that money's not coming back wherever it came from, wherever it went. It's gone. You know that, Mike. And so so this is where I get a little bit confused, because today there's a new budget out. You know people on the left are going to go crazy, and, well, he's cutting this, and he's cutting that, and he's doing this. The fact of the matter is we got to make some trims somewhere because of how reckless the last the last two administrations were when it came to finances. Not just Barack Obama, but George W. Bush spent money like a drunken sailor, too. No offense to our people in service. But it's true, Mike, and we've got to find some ways to figure that out. But you know what? That's a good question that I'm going to kind of dig on the next time I have a congressman as to what happened to that money and how we shore up the whole system. Is that fair? All right, then. Greatly appreciate it. Mike, thanks for calling in. The hotline number, 888-900-9966. If you'd like to check in today. I'm going to Tom Hodges now, Ford dealer of connectivity at Ford Motor Company. Ford and Panasonic are testing out an industry first here in Michigan, a smart service kiosk from Ford. Not sure what that means, but Tom Hodges, welcome to the program.
Hi, Steve. The connection is breaking up a little bit here, but I think we can get through this okay. I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing good. Sounds like you're at work already, which is good. So tell me about this automated system and what it'll mean for me in a service system.
Yes, sir. It's a unique combination, Steve, of a large touchscreen with some mechanized hardware in the background, and in between those two is a very sophisticated software engine that's kind of the brain of this kiosk. And in short, it allows you as a service customer to have an alternative method to drop off your vehicle for service, as well as be able to automatically retrieve your key using the kiosk after the service work is done. And there's a credit card, a credit and debit card reader built into the kiosk. So if you have an open unpaid service bill at the end of the process, you can even use the kiosk to close out your service bill when you're done.
So basically, you know, so it's all clean and easy and saves people time and effort, it sounds like.
I'm really sorry if you can hear me. you broken up to the point where I can barely hear you.
I will try this one more time, Mike, and then we'll try for a better connection next time. It just makes it easier on the customer. Yes or no? All right, we'll just drop that. I don't know where he is. It sounds like he's inside a Ford Motor Company vehicle, like inside it, like the motor portion of it. At any rate, we'll get back to him. Don't worry about it, Alex. We'll get that figured out. Going forward. Let me see if there's anything you've missed today. I just want to run back through and see that we've gotten everything we need to cover here. At the FBI, top FBI official under scrutiny today, because last year his wife's campaign contributions from a Hillary Clinton ally did not get disclosed during her run for office. The records obtained through a Freedom of Information Act show that FBI Deputy Director Andrew McCabe left the box empty where his wife, Dr. Jill McCabe's salary should have been. She's a doctor with Commonwealth Emergency Physicians, and she also ran for state senate, and she also got nearly $500,000 from Terry McAuliffe, who is now the governor of the state of Virginia. And it's pretty shocking that that was never disclosed. And he is now the number two man at the FBI. Well, he's being investigated now. We'll see where that ends up leading, because obviously that's not going to fly. You've probably heard by now that the travel ban has been blocked by a judge in Hawaii, as another activist judge has stepped up to prevent Donald Trump from his plenary power. As the president of the United States, he does have the right, the power to dictate who may come and go from this country. But for the second time in a short period of time, we have a situation where a judge, an activist judge, has stepped up and blocked the president from doing what he thinks is right. This time it's U.S. District Judge Derek Watson. That is an Obama appointee. And he ruled after a hearing yesterday that the plaintiffs, the state of Hawaii, and a Muslim leader showed a strong likelihood to succeed in their lawsuit against the ban. They argue that the policy violates the Establishment Clause. I have no idea how that's even possible, and proves irreparable harm. Why? Because 70 people were not able to travel to Hawaii in 2016, is what he's saying. And all this ban does is temporary. It's a 90-day ban. And this kind of pushback from activist judges should be frightening to even Dan Kildee, Congressman Kildee, a Democrat today, said you need to be very careful about how far these judges go when they infringe on the powers of the president. But make no mistake, these judges think that there's no check and balance on this judge, because it's part of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. So if the Trump administration goes back and says, we're going to take this to court, the same Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals is going to uphold the temporary restraining order. It's going to block the ban. And what you have is, by effect, our judges doing the job of the legislature and the executive branch. There is no check. The courts have become far too powerful to enact their own legislation, if you will. Far too powerful. So we'll be talking about that going forward. And plus, tomorrow's conversation, as we get deeper into this budget from the president put forth today. A lot of conversation about the budget and how that money is going to be spent. By the way, if you need to get a bracket filled out, you've only got a couple of hours left before games tip off for March Madness. So get that handled. We'll be right back on the Steve Gruber Show.